We are on page 468, Pasuk Yud Gimel, Pasuk 13. Last time we finished up with the ephod, the apron that the Kohen Gadol wore, and we discussed the way it's like a riding apron of women, and we're going to learn about the cheshen, the breastplate, but in the middle there's like two psukim that says, Asisa Mishpesei Zahav, you should make two settings of gold. It doesn't say how many, but the fact that it says plural, it means two. And the Torah will explain later what you're supposed to do with these two settings of gold. Ushtei shashirei zahav, and two chains made out of pure gold. Migboleis tasa esam, you should make them at the edges of braided craftsmen. V'nasata shashirei zahavesis, and you should place the braided chains on the settings. Because we're going to see, this is what's going to be holding up the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol, which he wore over the apron. That means there was a me'il, there was a long robe, over the robe went an apron, and over the apron went the breastplate. And now we're going to get into the actual, what's called the Cheshen HaMishpat, which was the breastplate with the 12 stones that the Kohen Gadol wore. Okay, so he says like this, Asisa Cheshen Mishpat, you should make a cheshen mishpat, a breastplate of judgment. We'll soon see why it's called judgment. It should be a woven design. And Chazal explained, there are 28 threads it was woven from. The material was woven from 28 different types of threads. K'maisei eifei ta'asenu, you should make it the same way that you made the eifeid. Zahav, tchelet, v'agamon, again, what are materials? Gold, turquoise, purple, scarlet wool, linen, twisted together, you should make it. So basically, the cheshen was...
The color?
The threads were made from these different colors. There's a golden thread, turquoise thread, purple thread, scarlet wool, linen, and it was... If you look at how many materials, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And each one was twisted 4. So it was like 24. It was made from 24 woven materials.
Where did you get 24?
Huh? Because it was six materials and doubled and doubled. So is that, you know, it was actually a lot of, it was a thicker material. So the ephod and the cheshen were made out of the same material. But we'll see like this. Ravu yihya, kafel, square it should be folded. Zeres arkei v'zeres rochbei. It should be a half a cubit its length and a half a cubit its width. Meaning like this. The cheshen was a material with all these materials woven together. It was one amma long, one cubit long. Okay, let's speak easier measurements. 2 feet long and 1 foot wide. Okay? But it was folded in two. So when it was folded in two, and we'll soon see why it was folded in two, it was actually a square of a half an amma by a half an amma. So the cheshen, the breastplate that the Kohen Gadol wore, was actually made 1 cubit by a half a cubit, 2 feet by 1 foot, but it was doubled over, and therefore was a perfect square of a half a cubit by a half a cubit. And in fact, again, we have these pictures. This is the cheshen, okay? Now if you see, it's longer, it's a rectangular here. But the bottom half was folded upward. Okay? It was folded upward behind. Huh? Yeah, but it was actually shows. Okay, it shows the way it was folded. Okay. But this picture is much clearer because this picture shows the colors and exactly how it was made with the two chains on top and the settings and everything. Okay? This was the Cheshen HaMishpat. Now, Rashi explains why was it called Cheshen HaMishpat? Rashi explains. Because the Cheshen HaMishpat, number one, it was forgiveness, like we learned all the other things of the Kohanim's garments were to forgiving certain things. So this was Mechaper al Kilkul Adin. In case there was corruptness in judgment, this would forgive the corruptness of judgment. If the judge made a mistake, or whatever they would do corrupt, that would forgive it. Another thing, it says it actually forgave. Another thing, the Mefarshim say it forgave was like this. By the way, it was a 28 folder of material. One second. Okay, it says two things. Number one, it forgave for the sin of corruption. Also was to show proper judgment to the Jewish people, the way Jewish people have to have proper judgment. So we're going to learn more psukim, and then we're going to discuss the whole thing. So basically, it was doubled, and therefore it became a perfect square of a half an amma, 1 foot by 1 foot. Umeleisa by Malua 7, you should fill with it a stone mounting, 4 rows, arba turim oven, 4 rows of stone. A row of tur eidem pitur of erekav satur achod is just going to go through all the names of the stones. And we're going to discuss why each one had this. Basically like this. As you can see in the Chumash that you have on page 470, there's a picture of the Chayshin. Okay? Now, the Chayshin, as you see, was doubled material. The bottom went upward, okay, to close it in the back. The reason why the Chayshin went folded up underneath, because in between the two halves of the Chayshin that was folded, they put what was called the Urim V'Tumim, which was a piece of parchment that had on it the name of God, the 72-lettered name of Hashem, and we'll soon see why 72-lettered name of Hashem. But that was when they used to ask questions from God, God would answer through the Urim V'Tumim.
Computer.
Not exactly. So basically, if this was the front of the Chayshin, okay, so the top half had stones, the 12 stones, 4 rows, okay? Right. It was folded up and back like this, okay? It was connected on top. And in between the fold of the Chayshin was this piece of parchment of the Urim V'Tumim, that Hashem's name, and that would light up the stones of the Chayshin, which would tell them the answer that God gave them. Because all the letters of the Aleph Beis were on the stones of the breastplate, of the Choshen.
So it was 3 by 4.
It was 3 on a row,
and 4 rows
down. Okay? Now, Mefarshim are going to explain, the 3 represents the 3 Ovis, the 4 rows down represents the 4 Imois, Sar, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. And not only that, but we'll see in the next few psukim, each stone, I don't know if I'm going to go into all of them, but each stone, like the first stone was Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and so on. So Reuven's stone, the color and the type of stone that Reuven had, represented the tribe, the personality and the tribe of Reuven. Shimon's stone was connected to Shimon, and Levi and Yehuda. Each stone was particularly connected. Now, as we will learn, the Pasuk doesn't say it, but Chazal tell us, that each stone had 6 letters. Each stone had 6 letters. Now the only tribe that had 6 letters was Binyamin. Because Reuven is Reish, Aleph, Vav, Beis, Nun. 5. Shimon is Shim, Mem, Ayin, Vav, Nun. It's again 5. Levi is 3. Right? Don would be 2. God would be 2. Asher would be 3. Nevertheless, each stone had 6 letters. So what it...
Benjamin has 2 yuds?
Yeah, well, the way it was in the Chayshin, 2 yuds.
Oh.
Because when he was born, the first time his name is mentioned in the Chumash, it says Kedol Deisam, Benjamin is with the 2 yuds.
Mm.
And explains why Benjamin himself took up a whole stone. But Chazal say like this.
The 2 yuds was for Hashem's name?
Huh? No. No. But okay. Now, we can't just forget it. And besides that, they had Avraham, and besides the names, they had and the stones of the breastplate, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Shiftei, Yeshurun. Okay? In other words, besides the names of the 12 tribes, they had Avraham's name, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Shiftei, Yeshurun, the tribes of the Jews. So like on the first, but like we said, each stone had six letters. So Reuven, which was five letters, had the Aleph of Avraham. Shimon, which was five letters, had the Beis of Avraham. Levi, which had three letters, had the Resh Hey Mem of Avraham. So on the first row, you had Reuven, the first stone, Reuven Aleph, Shimon Beis, Levi Resh Hey Mem. So you had together Avraham. Then Yehud had five letters, so it was a Yud for Yitzchak. Yisachar had five letters, it's a Tzaddik. Zvulun had five letters, it would be a Ches. Dan had two letters, so it was the Kuf of Yitzchak and Yud Ayin Kuf of Yaakov's name. Naphtali had five letters, so it was the Beis. And then God had two letters, so they had the word Shiftei, Shin Beis Tes Yud, which is another four letters. And Asher would have the Yud Shin Reish, and Yosef would have the Vav Nun. And Binyamin had no other name, because he was six letters. Now, why was there six letters? I'm just explaining the whole thing before we learn it inside. Because the Pasuk doesn't say all this stuff. This is Chazal saying. Why were there six letters per stone? Because six letters represents the sixth day of creation. Not yet. No, it was before the Mishnah. The sixth represents the 6 days of creation. Okay? Now, when you add, you multiply the 12 Shvatim times six is 72. Mm-hmm. That corresponds with the name of Shem Ab, which is the name of 72 letters. There's a Kabbalistic name of 72 letters. Now, it's not necessarily the name Ab, depends how you learn in Kabbalah, but this is an interesting thing that people should know anyway. If you ever learn Hasidus or Kabbalah, there's what's called Shem Ma, Shem Ban, Shem Sag, and Shem Ab. Okay, what does that mean? When you have God's name, Yud, Hey, Vav, and Hey. Okay, that equals 26. Yudke Vavke equals 20, the tetragram, we know, equals 26. But each letter in the Aleph base, like the letter Aleph, right? When you pronounce the word Aleph, it's really Aleph Lamed Pei, makes up the word Aleph. Beis is Beis Yud Saf. Gimel is Gimel Yud Mem Lamed. So you have one letter Gimel, but it's really composed of what's called the Milui, the pronunciation of the name, the makeup of the name.
You call it Milui?
Milui. Now, when you have Yud, K, Vav, K, okay, now the letter Yud is written Yud, Vav, Dalet. Hey could be Hey Aleph, Hey Hey, or Hey Yud. Now, Vav could be Vav Vav, or Vav Aleph Vav. And the last Hey could be Hey Hey, Hey Aleph, or Hey Yud. Okay? Now, using all those combinations, like for instance, if you take Yud Kei Vav Kei, and you take the letter Yud, Yud Vav Dalid, okay? So Yud is 10, Vav is 6, Dalid is 4. So the letter Yud equals 20. Okay? If you take Vav Vav, is 6 and 6, is 12, is 32. If you take Hey Aleph, right, then it's 6. And another Hey is another 6, is 12. So, if you have 32 and 12 is 44. But then the Vav Vav is not Vav Vav, it's Vav Alev Vav. So that would equal 45. If you do it Hey Hey, then it would equal 52. If you do Hey Yud, you know, basically you get different ways that it equals either 45, 52, 63, or 72. That if you add the Yud Kei Vav Kei written out, the numerical value of those things would either equal Ma, which is 45, Ban, which is 52, Sag, which is 63, and Ab is 72. Okay? Now, when Hashem created the world, it says, when did Hashem say in the 6 days of creation, Vayomer Elokim? Hashem said in the morning, right? It says 12 hours of daylight. So 6 times 12 is 72. That's the name of Ab, the name of God of 72. And that's why it says, Olam, in Tilim, there's a pasuk, Olam Chesed Yibana. God created the world with Chesed. Chesed, Ches, Samach Dalet equals 72. Because God created the world with the Shem Ab. Because it's Vayomer 6 times, 12 hours a day. So the revelation that created the world with was the name of Ab. Parenthetically, the word Adam, so you have God's name is like this, Ma, which is 45, Ban is 52, Sag is 63, and Ab is 72. Right? Now, Ma, Memhe, is a numerical value of Adam. Aleph, Dalet, Mem, Adam, person equals 45. Behema equals 52. That's why it says, Adam u'behema toshi Hashem, because there's names of God that correspond with Adam, the name of God that corresponds with Behema. Ma is Adam, Behema is Ban. Now, the interesting question is, it's called Ma, Ban, Sag, and Ab. The question is, it should be called Ma, Nab, Sag, and Ab. Because Mem comes before the Hey, Samach comes before the Gimel, Ayin comes before the base. So instead of Ban, Beis Nun, it should be called Nab, Nun Beis. Uh-huh. So why in Kabbalah is it called the name of Ban? It should be called Nab, Nun Beis. Right? Why is it called Beis Nun?
Because it's like the sun.
No. You writing your own books? So it says the answer, one of the answers is like this. Hashem is Emes. Right? Emes, Aleph Mem Sof, equals 441. Right? Emes is 441. 4, 4, and 1 equals 9. What's the connection between Emes and 9? Yeah, but what's the uniqueness of 9 in reference to Emes? Because any multiple of 9 equals 9. Therefore, there's a Ralbag that says, Ha'emes maskim la'atzmo mikol tzad. Truth agrees to itself in all angles. 9 is the only number in math that any multiple of it equals it. Mm-hmm. Like 9 times 2 is 18, 1 and 8 is 9. 3 times 9 is 27, 2 and 7 is 9. 36, 45, 54, any multiple of 9 will always equal 9. That means it's a real emesser number because it always adds up to itself. So any way you look at it, it's 9. Okay. Now, when you have Ma, Memhe is 45. 4 and 5 is 9. Sag is Samach Gimel. 6 and 3 is 9. Ab is 72. 7 and 2 is 9. Now when you have Nab, it's 52. 5 and 2 equals 7. You don't have 9. So that's why it's called Ban. Why is it called Ban? Because in Svarim it's brought down. The highest number is tough, 400. But then you have what's called the Asis Kfulis, the final mam and the, you know, mam sofit and all that. So it says in Sfarim that the long chaf sofit is 500, mem sofit is 600, nun sofit is 700, pei sofit is 800. So if you have ban, so then it's nun sofit equals 700. So then ban equals 702. 7 and 2 equals 9. That's, huh? The number game.
Oh my God, I feel that math when in third grade.
Excuse me. 7 plus 2 equals 9 is first grade math. That's all parenthetical. So it says the name of Hashem that was in the order of Tumim is the name Ab, which officially has 72 letters, but doesn't necessarily mean 72 letters. But
so
that's...
It would have been Nun, not Sofit.
Right, then it would only be 52. But if you have Nun Sofit, then Nun Sofit equals 700. So Ban is 702, which again equals 9. That's the whole... because Hashem Elokim is Emes. So, what?
Which is Shabbat.
Everything in Shabbat equals 7. Right.
Which is the same as...
It equals 9 also. It's not for now, but you could take any word in Torah
and
equals 9. Exactly. No. Any word of Torah equals 9. Unless you have a word bow, like 3. I mean, then it's
not... Above 9.
Anything above 9 will equal 9. No, but I'll give you an example. No, you have to do. Sometimes you have to do both. I'll give you an example. Bracious is too hard. Take this word of Chumash, bara. Okay, Beis, Reish, Aleph. No, it's 203. 203 equals 5. Right. 1 second. But if you take 203, 2 and 3 is 5. If you subtract 5 from 203. You get 198, which again equals 9. Any word in Torah, you can make a cheshbon of 9.
Why did you subtract 5?
No, because bara equals 203, right? Now, 203, misper cotton, that means if you... There's an English word for it, I don't know the mathematician though. There's an English word for it, like 4 and 4 equals what, 9? There's a word of that type of number, whatever. So if you take bara, which is 203... 2 and 3 equals 5, not 9. But if you subtract 5, which Beis, Reish, Aleph equal, from 203, you'll get 198, and 198 equals 9. Because 1 and 9 is 10, and 8 is 18, 1 and 8 equals 9. You could take any word in Chumash will equal 9. Except the words, like, bow is 3, so you're not going to... Huh? So then... Right. Even the name of God... equals 26, right? 2 and 6 is 8. If you subtract 8 from 26, you get 18. Right? So even Yudke Vavke equals 9. And this is all brought down as far. It's not my own stuff, by the way.
So 7 is the days of the week, 8 is above the nature, and 9 is the truth?
Yeah.
Symbolic of...
Whatever. B'chlal, it says all the food you eat on Shabbos equals 7. Eat fish, dog, Dalet Gimel is 7. Mm-hmm. Basar, Beis, Shin, Reish. Beis and Shin is, 1 second.
502.
502. 502. 5 and 2 is 7. Marak, if you eat soup, it's... Marak is 3:40. 3 and 4 equals 7.
How about kibbeh?
What's that? No, it's only Ashkenazic food. Don't not get Chinese with this Sephardic food over here.
Pacha.
Gondi.
Let's keep to the traditional Ashkenazi food. Kugel, soup, fish.
Which came first?
Huh?
What about couscous?
Which came first?
Couscous. We went through this already.
I worked with Aaron, it came out.
Okay. Anyway, no, so it's interesting. Everything in Shabbos equals 7, everything in Torah equals 9, Emes equals 9. So anyway, so therefore, on the stones, They had, coming back to here, they had this six letters per stone. So those, most of the names had five letters to it. So then you had Aleph of Avram and Beis of Avram and Resh Mem of Avram and then Yitzchok and Yaakov and Shifte Yeshurun. These were all the stones that existed on the Yichoshin. So now let's see it a little bit inside, and then we're going to go and discuss the Midrashim over here. Okay, so he says like this. In Malaysia, Beit Abed, Malua 7, you should fill it up with a stone mounting, because the stones went into the mounting, right? Four rows of stone. One row was Edem Pidito of Erekas Atur Echod, a row of Odem Pidito of Erekas, that was Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, one row. The second row was Nofach Sapi V'Yohalom. The third row was Leshim Shmo V'Achlama. V'Atur Arvi, Tarshish Shem V'Yoshvei, Tarshish Shom and Yoshvei, Meshubotzim Zohav. They were set in gold. Yubim Milusim should be their mounting. So basically, these were precious stones mounted like jewelry. You know, diamonds are mounted in a gold setting. So these stones were mounted in a gold setting on the Choshen. Okay, now, what?
It's like you asked, where did they find the stones?
Oh, so now we're coming, where did they get these stones from? The interesting thing is, the stones had to be complete. They were not allowed to be cut. You know, many times you have a precious stone that you cut it to size. These stones were not allowed to be cut because by cutting it, you're actually going to chip off a little bit. Okay? So it says like this. There's a whole famous medrash with Ashmedai, with Shlomo HaMelech, with the Shamir. Hashem commanded precious gems of the Choshen and Eifer be perfect, without the smallest splinter missing. Therefore, how did they engrave the letters on the stone?
Laser.
If you take...
Shamir the Laser. Shamir Laser.
His last name was Laserson.
Yeah.
Now, if you take a carving knife, to engrave, you're chipping off a little bit of the stone. So the stone is not perfect anymore. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, you know, how do we do this? Okay, so they brought this Shamir worm. Shamir is actually a worm. And it was as big as a barley corn. The size of a barley. It was created in Erev Shabbos Bein Hashmashos, you know, the Shamir, it says in Pirkei Avos, and it had the marvelous ability to split the hardest of rocks. In fact, there's a whole machlekes in the Gemara when it says in the building of the Beis Hamikdash, not the Mishkan, Avonim Shleimes Tivna, the Mizbeach. Now, you can't put metal on the Mizbeach. So how did they cut the stones of the Mizbeach in the altar to be perfectly thing? So Shlomo HaMelech, so Moshe Rabbeinu had the Shamir. So what they did was, when they wanted to engrave, let's say, the name Reuven on the stone, so they made a pen mark, or whatever, Reuven, that they wrote out, they didn't cut the stone, they just wrote it on the stone. They put the Shamir on the stone, and it carved out an exact, perfect, Resh, Aleph, Beis, Vav, Nun, you know, all the names, without cutting any of the stone. What?
He was directed, or he did it by himself?
No, they wrote a pen mark. They brought like a Resh.
He would follow the...
Yeah.
Like he would know his carving?
Listen, if he could do such a thing, trust me, he knew what he was doing.
Is that a miracle without ever carving anything or taking anything out of the stone? That's so amazing.
It was a... Well, we'll soon see that Shamir was not accessible, Bechlal. Mm-hmm. Hashem made the Shamir for the sake of the Beis HaMikdash, for the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash. Mm-hmm. Therefore, from the time Moshe Rabbeinu finished the Mishkan, that they didn't need the Shamir anymore... He disappeared. Well, they knew where he was. Shlomo HaMelech needed to build the Beis HaMikdash, and he needed the Shamir. So he figured out how is he going
to
get the Shamir.
He was in a resort in Tel Aviv.
In Caribbean. Now, Shlomo HaMelech ruled... The Gemara says he ruled over the devils and demons, the Shadim. Shlomo HaMelech ruled them. So, he asked the Chachamim, how are we going to build the Beis HaMikdash when we need to cut the stones? How are we going to do it? So, Chachamim said to him, the Shamir, that Moshe Rabbeinu used. How could I find the Shamir? They told them, the Chacham said, speak to the Shadim. The devils and demons, I'll tell you. So, why did the Chachamim say that the Shadim would know? Because they were created the same time, Erev Shabbos, in twilight. The Shadim, Afam Azikin, and the Shamir. This doesn't pick you up. So, they know that they had a connection between the two of them. So they know if there's anybody who's not going to know where the Shamir is, it's going to be the Shadim. So what happened was like this. He called it the Shadim. Shlomo Amal called him. The Shadim says, hey, where's the Shamir? They said, the only one that knows about it is Ashmedai. He was the chief of the Shadim. Okay, where does Ashmedai live? Go find Ashmedai. So he says, the demons told him that in a certain mountain where Ashmedai resided. And he says like this, Ashmedai digs a pit on the mountain which he fills with water. Every day he seals the opening of the pit with a rock that somebody shouldn't poison as well. And then he flies up to heaven. He only drinks in the water, well, if he comes back and he sees it wasn't touched. So Shlomo HaMelech called in his chief of staff, Binyanyahu ben Yehoyada, and he said to him like this. He gave him a chain with a ring, and on the ring was the name of Yudkei, the Shema Mefedesh, the name of God. And he gave him a fleece of wool and wine-filled flasks, barrels full of wine. He said like this. He went to the mountain where the Shadim told him Ashmedai would be. He found a well, and he dug a hole in an adjoining pit. And he siphoned out all the water, and he filled up the pit with wine. And he stuffed the hole with the wool that Shlomo HaMelech gave him.
Sounds tricky.
So, what happened? Ashmedai come back in the evening from his heavenly trip. He's thirsty. He checks the thing. It's not water. He says something's funny. But he got so thirsty, he drank it. He drank the wine and he fell asleep. And then Ben Yoyada was up on a tree and he saw the story. And when Ashmedai fell asleep, he took this chain with Hashem's name on it and he wrapped it around Ashmedai's neck. And when Ashmedai woke up, he couldn't break the name of God because that would be disrespectful. Ashmedai had no power to break the name of God. So he says to Binyanyahu, he's screaming, what do you want from me? He said, Shlomo HaMelech needs you. So he says, why? You know, who's he to call me, you know? Anyway, so he says, the name of Hashem is upon you, you have to come back to Shlomo HaMelech. So the story goes like this. Ashmedai allowed Binyanyahu to lead him back to Shlomo HaMelech. On the way, he broke a tree and demolished the house. When they passed the poor widow's hut, she begged Ashmedai, don't destroy it. So he had Rachmanis, and he broke a bone of his own body instead. He said, that's what Shlomo HaMelech says, a soft tongue breaks a bone. Shlomo HaMelech says, Mishlei, a soft tongue breaks a bone. Okay. Then they passed a blind man walking in the street. Ashmedai helped him. He's a nice guy, nice shade. He helped him. He also helped a drunkard who was walking on the road. Then they passed a bridal chasana, a wedding, and Ashmedai started crying. He started crying at the wedding. Then they heard a man ordering a shoemaker, make me shoes that will last me 7 years. And Ashmedai started burst out in laughter. And then he also amused himself observing a magician who proclaimed his great power in magic. So this was the trip to Shlomo HaMelech. All these things took place. Comes to Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech kept him waiting for 3 days. Just to show his power over Ashmedai. Anyway, he got angry. And when he finally came into Shlomo HaMelech, he took a stick, 4 amos, and he threw the stick to Shlomo HaMelech and he said, this is the scope of your grave. This is going to be the size of your grave, 4 amos. Who the heck do you think you are? You ordering me around like this. Like, who do you think you are? So Shlomo HaMelech said to him, the reason I disturbed you, I need to build a Beis HaMikdash, I need you. I need the Shamir. Tell me how to get it. So he says, so Ashmedai said to him, I don't have the Shamir. It was Hashem made the angel of the sea its guardian. And the angel of the sea handed it over to a certain bird who watches the Shamir very carefully from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. So he says, the Bohan needs it for its own sustenance. She carries the Shamir to uninhabited mountains, this bird, and the Shamir splits the rocks, and he puts seeds into the rocks, and trees come, and that's the way he supports, this bird supports his family. So Shlomo HaMelech figured out how to capture this bird, that he should be able to get the Shamir. So he said the servant found Barhan's nest, the mother bird wasn't there, so he dropped the glass cover over the nest containing the babies. When the mother returned, she saw that she was separated with the glass. So she came back with the Shamir to break the glass. So immediately the guy scared the mother bird, he dropped the Shamir, and they got the Shamir. So this is the way Shlomo HaMelech got the Shamir to use in the Beis HaMikdash, that Moshe Rabbeinu used the Shamir for the Choshen. But then, it's interesting, Binyayahu, Shlomo HaMelech's chief of staff, asked Ashmedai, can you explain what happened on the way, on the trip? He said like this, why did you guide the blind man? He asked Ashmedai, you're such a cruel guy, why did you guide the blind man? I heard in heaven, replied Ashmedai, that this man is a tzaddik, and whoever assists him acquires a share in the world to come. He said, why did you help the drunkard? He says, because I heard it proclaimed in heaven that this drunkard is a Rasha Gamur, a complete Rasha, and I wanted to do kindness to him in this world, that he shouldn't have any reward in the world to come. That's why I helped him. And he said, why did you weep when you saw the Chosin and Kala? He says, because I know that the bridegroom is destined to die within a month, and his wife will remain widowed for 12 years. So I cried. And why did you laugh at the man who instructed the shoemaker to sew him shoes, to make him shoes to last 7 years? Because I know, he played Ashmedai, that it will not even live 7 days. And he's ordering shoes for 7 years. Ashmedai said, it's funny. Huh?
Is it prophet, the
shoe? Yeah. And he says, why did you laugh at the magician? You know, he says, he claims that he has knowledge of events taking place at the end of the world. He does not even know that there's a treasure buried right under his feet. So Ashmedai had this, a good laugh from everybody that was going on. Anyway, so that's the story, how Shlomo HaMelech got the Shamir that Moshe Rabbeinu used to make these, to cut the stones of the Choshen.
Why Shlomo HaMelech was so powerful, have to go through all those tricks to just bring Ashmedai to give him the Shamir? Doesn't he order every shed?
Yeah, but it was Ashmedai, and Ashmedai said, it's not up to me. I don't have it. Hashem wants some people working for the money.
Oh. So you have to work, you needed to be tested?
Right.
Some people get money without working.
Yeah, right. Okay. Just 1 second. Okay.
Do you hear what David says?
What?
It's a little bit like Jack and the Beanstalk or something, you know? I'm sorry, I don't mean to be making fun of it, but it's just like, okay, this guy can rule over all the devils and demons, but one little worm, he has to go through all this? That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. It's not, in life you have many things like that.
Yeah.
People are very powerful.
And a little worm can get them.
Look at Abba Titus, a little mosquito went up his nose and made a mess out of him. Okay, now, why was, just to go through a number of these things. Okay, now, Odem, which was Reuven's stone, just to mention a few of them. Odem was red, okay? Because Reuven's face reddened with shame when he admitted his sin with Bilhah, that he moved Yaakov's bed from, you know, the Bilhah to Leah.
Does that mean it's a ruby? Or, no, I'm serious.
Odem is a jewel as red as blood. I don't know what it is.
That's ruby.
Odem is red. I mean, Odem is red. Is it a ruby? Maybe. I don't know. Maybe it's a different stone. Pirdada is a green jewel. Why? Because his face turned green with the Zimri story, with the head of the tribe of Shimon and the Pinchas story when they started committing adultery. Barakas was multicolored sparkling jewel which glowed like fire. By the way, it says in the Medrash, this was the stone Noach used in the Teva. The Tzohar Tasa LaTeva, Rashi says, Evan Tova. It was a Barakas. It was a multicolored sparkling jewel which glowed like fire. So it gave light. It was given to the tribe of Levi because they illuminated the world with the Torah study. Nofech was a greenish, brilliant stone representing Yehuda because his face paled when he was challenged by Tamar, you know, and the whole story over there. Sapir was sky blue for Yisachar, who was famed for Torah study, which is like the Tcheles and the Rekia. Yahalam is a white jewel bearing Zvulun's name, because the white color represents a merchant's chair, which was white. It was success in business. So it was white, because that was Segula for Zvulun. Leshem was done, because it was the image of a person upside down. And they set up the whole Pesel Micha, the idol that Micha brought out of Eretz Yisrael. Don ended up getting involved in it. Shvo was Naphtali's stone. It enabled the rider to remain seated firmly on horseback. That's Naphtali, which is attachment and quickness and so on. Achlama was the tribe of God. This jewel strengthened the person's courage in battle, and God was fighting the wars. Tarshish was Osh's gem. His golden color was the olive oil that was in Osh's possession. Shoham was Yosef's diamond. It was a skula for causing a person to find favors in the eyes of others, even before high officials. That's why Shoham is the same letters as Hashem. And Yosef was called on Hashem's name, Yosef Samay Yudke Vovke. Yospo was multicolored jewel. It was Binyamin, because conflicting thoughts went through Binyamin's mind. He was uncertain what happened. But Yospo comes to the word Yesh Peh. What does it mean, Yesh Peh? That even though Binyamin knew that Yosef was sold, he never opened his mouth to snitch on the brothers that they were the one that sold Yosef. So these are the stones that correspond actually with the personality of each one of the Shvatim. And then he brings down, the Gemara says that after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the Shamir worm disappeared. Nobody knows where it is.
Until the Mashiach, no?
Yeah, it was only one guy, one worm. He lived long.
Until the Mashiach?
Yeah.
Supposed to be deep in the earth.
If it disappeared, you ain't going to find it. Hashem took it somewhere. Who knows where?
What about the second Beit HaMikdash?
The second Beit HaMikdash, they used the Shamir also. According to many opinions. What?
Where did they find the Shamir?
I don't know. How did they find it? For this? Maybe they guarded it. I don't know. That I never saw anywhere.
How big was it, the worm?
The size of a barley.
Like this big?
Barley corn, whatever that is.
Like short grain brown
rice. Kaseida, the Gemara says, like the size of a barley.
Like this.
Tiny.
That's how big it was?
Yeah, that's how big it was.
Like the size of a pea.
And it was so powerful.
It was a God. Listen, we learned before there was Eidus Tchoshim. There were multicolored skin. Remember the cover of the Mishkan? Yeah. It was from the animal Tachash. And Rashi says it became extinct right after the Mishkan. Hashem put it in the world because he needed it in the Mishkan. Okay? The Medrash says that Lahaya Ha'ilam Roy Lazav, the world wasn't worthy to have gold. Why is there gold in the world? Because God needed it for the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash, so meanwhile he dumped it into the world. There are certain things Hashem created just for the purpose what he needed in the Beis HaMikdash, and then it was not needed anymore, so it was finished. What's the Shamir?
Why would he create more gold than there's needed?
He wants you to buy the wives' jewelry.
Good answer.
Everything is about the wives.
Wives not.
Okay. But he brings down over here just the end of that medrash, by the way, that Ashmedai taught Shlomo HaMelech and his servants a few general rules. One rule is that people are often merry on occasions when they should be mourning, that men make preparations to live a long life instead of preparing for the true life in Olam Haba, that many people spend their lives searching for hidden fortunes while unacquainted with their immediate surroundings.
That's very good.
There's a medrash says, Parsha Shmeis, Parsha Tetzave. That's it. Very, very simple book. There's a famous story. There's a famous story that there was once Yankel the tailor. It's a famous story they tell kids. There's a guy, Yankel the tailor. There's a very poor man. And one time he had a dream that underneath the bridge outside the king's palace, there's a treasure. So he right away went and sold whatever he had, and he went to the bridge to dig to find the treasure that he saw in his dream. So he thought nobody was watching. He ended up getting caught by the guard. So the guard says, "What are you doing? You wanted to kill him, trespassing the king's palace, and who knows what he's going to do." So he said, "I'll tell you the truth." The guy didn't know who he was. He just, Yankel the tailor said, "Listen, I just had a dream. I'll tell you the truth." He said, "I had a dream that there's a treasure waiting for me at the foot of the king's bridge, and I came here to go dig to find the treasure." So the guard said to him, "You moron. I had a dream that under Yankel the tailor's stove in his kitchen, there's a big treasure. You think I'm going to go find Yankel the tailor and go to his house and go get the treasure?" So Yankel the tailor said, "Wow, whoa." So he ran home and he dug under his stove and he found the treasure. So the same thing Ashmedai taught Shlomo Melech. Sometimes you're going digging, looking in other religions and other things, when the thing is underneath your own foot. But the lesson is, why did Abish to make that he has to go? What's the moral, so to speak, that he has to go? Because sometimes you need to find the treasure in your own place by first going somewhere else. You have to go look for it. And when you go look for it, you have to realize that it's really under it. So that's what the Ashmedai taught Shlomo. Many people spend their life searching for hidden fortunes while unacquainted with their immediate surroundings. Meaning, it says like this. And he says in Meralmi Prague, wrote a sefer on the stories of the Gemara. He explains like this. What's the exchange of water for wine that he changed, the well from water to wine, and the chain? He said they signify that Shlomo converted the demon's essence so as to force him under his dominion. Similarly, the Shamir entrusted to Bar-Hen and the Bar-Hen choking herself are but symbols of metaphysical concepts. In other words, the Meralmi Prague explains that the whole story of the Gemara is not necessarily a physical story that he changed water and emptied out the water and put the wine. It could be spiritual, symbolic messages, so to speak, and lessons that the Torah is just using allegorical, physical words when it really means something much deeper. Okay, so these are the stones. So he says like this, Va'avonim, Pasuk Chof Aleph. Va'avonim, the stones, Tiyan al-Shmeis b'nei Yisrael, should be according to the names of the Yidden, of the Shnei Masi al-Shmeisam, Pituche Chesim Ish al-Shmei, each one engraved like a signet ring, Tiyan al-Shnei Asir Shavit, should be for the 12 tribes. Basically, we learned that each tribe, each stone, had the engraved name of that particular Shavit. Now, in order to Chayshin, if you see on the picture in 469, okay, it's not a very good picture, but you have the headless kohen there, okay, having the breastplate, and underneath the breastplate is the ephod. Now, the straps of the ephod, remember, went behind the person. The straps of the ephod went back and were tied on top. Okay? So now, the choshen was tied to with the chain to the straps of the ephod on top, and then it was tied at the bottom to the ephod. Because otherwise the chayshu would keep moving. Ephod was the apron. The apron at the bottom of the Kohen's picture. The ephod is on 467.
No, on the big one.
Which big one? Oh, which was the ephod. When the Kohen Gadol wore it, that's the back of the Kohen Gadol. This is the front of the Kohen Gadol. Okay? Now, you see in front, this is the blue thing, yeah, is the me'il that we didn't learn about yet. That's the robe.
Right.
Okay? On top of the me'il was an ephod. This. Now, on the back, it was closed. Okay? It was closed in the back. In the front, it was open. Mm-hmm. And the straps of the ephod went, two straps on the back of the kohen. Mm-hmm. Okay? Here, if you want to look at the picture in 467, in your Chumash, there's a picture of the ephod. No, it's back. 467. Page 467. You see the straps of the ephod, okay? Now, the straps on top of the straps of the ephod on his kohen shoulders were the two Avnei Shoham, also with the names engraved of the Jewish people of the 12 tribes, okay? And to that he connected the gold chains to connect the choshen to the top shoulder pads of the ephod, and also was connected on the bottom to the ephod. Huh?
So many layers.
Yeah, okay, it was kept warm.
What about in the summer?
It had air conditioning. First of all, not the Mishkan, but the Meis HaMikdash was cold.
Yeah.
They had a stone floor, and the Kohanim were barefoot. In fact, there was a special room in the Beis HaMikdash that was fires burning, the warm-up room. The Kohanim, when they got cold, would go into that room to warm up.
What is that
Mishnah? Huh? The Mishnah. Wow. Mishnayis and Tamid. Midas, I mean, not Midas. Midas. Shnayis Midas has all the chambers and the rooms that the Kohanim wore where they would warm up here. And because, in fact, the Kohanim, there's a special doctor in the Beis HaMikdash. Kohanim got very sick very often. Because the Kohanim ate a lot of meat from the Korbanos, and they were on a barefoot, the Kohanim were barefoot, no shoes, no socks. So they were barefoot on a stone floor. So you know, you catch colds, and it's meat, and the diet's not that great. And they used to get sick a lot. There was a doctor in the Beis HaMikdash.
Seriously?
No, I'm joking.
I mean, doesn't Hashem protect them from that? Because they didn't,
yeah, that's why they had a doctor. That's why he protects them.
Yeah, it seems a little bit...
He didn't call a doctor. He was the...
He was the team doctor.
Exactly.
Now, here's just a clear picture of how the Choshen was connected on top. It's just a bigger picture. It was connected to the stones, the Avnei Shoham, and what?
Like a
shirt. Like what?
Like a
shirt. Yeah, the hat on top. Well, by the way, these two pictures, the white guy, that's what a regular Kohen looked like.
The white
guy.
Where's the white guy?
Only the white hat. The Kohen had a white hat also like everybody else, but he also had the tzitz, which is the golden thing with two golden straps. Or blue straps. What?
With the name of Hashem across.
Yeah, with the name of Hashem across.
Now, why did you have the veil this time?
This is what a Kohen Gadol really looked like, wearing all his garments. It says he looked like a malach. That's what it says in the Mefarshim.
Like a malach?
Like an angel. This was the robe with the bells at the bottom that we're going to learn next time about. Pomegranates and bells, and this is the Kohen Gadol and the Kohen Hedyot.
The what?
The regular Kohen,
oh, yeah,
is the guy on the right, and the guy on the left is the Kohen Gadol. That's what they look like.